There's a $15 million mystery to solve in our backyard, and it started with an old painting found at a Minnesota garage sale.
It's a picture of a fisherman in a fur cap with a pipe mending a net, and you see the ocean behind him, and the ocean is calm. And he seems to be very pensive, and he's looking at the net that he's mending.
That's Susan Brantley, professor of Scandinavian Studies at UW-Madison. A few years back, she got the call that her expertise in reading and analyzing 19th century literature from Denmark was needed to authenticate this painting of a fisherman. It's thought to be a long-lost work by the acclaimed Dutch painter Vincent van Gogh.
The first time you look at it, you would say, "What? That's not a Van Gogh. Everybody knows what a Van Gogh looks like.
You know, starry night, sunflowers. This fisherman is not them." But while researching the painting with a team of art historians, data scientists, and other experts, Brantley became convinced that they had a real Van Gogh in their hands.
After years of research, the painting called Elamar is making headlines. The question remains, is it a Van Gogh? The authentication firm says yes, but the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam recently said nope, leaving it an unsettled question in the art world.
Susan Brantley joined us to talk about her experience digging into this mystery and what it was like to get the call about a possible Van Gogh.
It was marvelous. I mean, granted, because a non-disclosure agreement was signed, I didn't know initially what the call was about, that there was some painter or another, and they needed some information that had to do with Danish, you know, literature. And so would I be willing to help them out? Sure. And then came the reveal. And as I just was grinning from ear to ear, I couldn't have been happier. I thought, oh, this is too cool for words.
What brought you so much joy?
What brings me joy is that I have, for decades, used visual art to illustrate my literature lectures. In fact, there's an episode on Wisconsin Public Television called Scandinavian Art and Literature where you can kind of see me doing exactly that. So I have always been, shall we say, a frustrated art historian. And here I get called to work with these experts who, you know, who do know what they're doing. I promise you they do. And to realize that the skills that I've been developing over a lifetime are valuable.
What does Elamar mean in the painting?
And that was my first task. It was fine. So what does Elamar mean? I did a search through, I mean, the Hathi Trust has a wonderful collection of older scanned in documents. And so I was searching for Elamar to see what came up. And the first thing that comes up is that Elamar is the hereditary sort of founder of the Duchy of Oldenburg. But then there is this character in a novel by Hans Christian Andersen, and the novel is called The Two Baronesses. And so the other Elamars that I ran across just made no sense in terms of this image, because the Elamar is actually it's an aristocratic name. It's an upper-class name. It's not like Niels or, you know, something like that that you would expect a fisherman to be called. So there is something a little odd about that. And so I kept, you know, looking, finding Elamars who, like I said, there were just no residents, nothing. But you look at Hans Christian Andersen's novel, and it is set, well, it has three parts. First and last parts are set in Denmark. The middle part takes place in the Hallinger Islands, which belonged to Denmark at this time, now belong to Germany. But there are Frisian speakers. It's this sort of North Country, North Sea culture, as I call it, that has fishermen in it, among other things.
No surprise there.
That's right. And a character called Elamar, who is studying to be a naval officer of some kind. And we meet him when he's a young man. And he heroically rescues one of the two titular baronesses when she's a child from an incoming flood, the tides coming in, and he saves her. He is at the same time kind of a complicated, he's a bad boy too. He gets in trouble and does all kinds of things. But the impact is that Elizabeth, who is the will be a baroness someday character, just falls madly in love with him, gets this terrible crush on him, and thinks about him all the time. And so Elamar, actually, whether he's on site for very long, he isn't really. But he's talked about a lot. He figures in Elizabeth's imagination in a number of the stories. And one of the more interesting stories about Elamar is that he has an ancestor who was prone to violent fits, and during a violent psychological fit, killed a person. Mm. And he ran away, leaving his wife and children to fend for themselves. And she worked, everybody admired her because she worked hard to feed her children and, you know, pay the fine. And this went on for a number of years. And then the people noticed that she was pregnant. Oh my gosh, you know, what's going on here? And they follow her and they find that she, over these years, has been meeting her husband, who's been actually hiding out in the dunes for years. And this faithfulness of the good woman makes everybody forgive Elamar's ancestor. And he's restored to his position in society and becomes wealthy and prosperous, and they live happily ever after, right? Isn't that
That's how it goes. But how would Elamar then, how would Van Gogh be interested in this character?
Well, because he himself was prone to these fits, right? The famous fit, you know, Gauguin is living with him in the Yellow House, and he has this psychotic break during which he cuts off his ear. Mm. And then he ends up in an asylum. And this was something that he had clearly struggled with his entire life. And so, you know, at what point he read this story, I rather suspect he read it as a very young man, maybe even a child. But it stuck because here's someone who has one of these fits, and it turns out okay, that there's a remedy, that there's a way out of it. And so I think that that makes this sort of Elamar figure a very attractive one.
So in a literary sense, then, my guess is you think that this is a Van Gogh.
I'm completely convinced because of the stories that you can read into this image. Mm-hmm. One of the things that really got me excited, yes, you know, I, you know, found Elamar. That's great. The next thing I was able to use my skills for was reading correspondence. I can read 19th century handwriting. Can you?
No.
That's not everybody who can, in Danish, no less. And there was a young Danish art student painter living in the south of France who met Van Gogh, Christian Maria Petersen. And so I read through the letters that he was writing home to his friend Johan Rode, who's also an art student and an artist, and not perhaps so coincidentally becomes known for introducing Van Gogh's art to Denmark. Mm. And so reading these letters gave me some insight into, you know, what it was to be an art student. And that involves copying things. You know, making, you know, either sketches or, you know, quick copies for reference later. And so Christian Maria Petersen had saved his pennies and had gone to the south of France to become an artist. Maybe he had in his portfolio a copy of Michael Unker, who was so well known during the years he was an art student. You know, is that where perhaps Van Gogh might have seen this image in order to be able to replicate it later? Well, so that was very interesting. So that, and that's my favorite theory. But then the scientific experts that the LMI group, who's the one who's been investigating this, they got together. They did an infrared scan. And so there are images not visible to the eye that you can see basically on either shoulder of the fisherman. On the one side is what looks like a boat, an empty boat that's been pulled up on the shore. On the other side is a sketch that rather looks like a woman, perhaps a child, and a cradle. And it's when I start getting into the stories behind those that it just makes so much sense.
You start connecting the dots.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
oh.
So I just want to stop here for a moment to realize that the theories that you are bringing to this mystery are layered upon other types of expertise, like the scanning and like the investigation of a hair found in a particular corner and the paint used.
Yeah, and that's what they do very well. That is this data-driven research. Mm-hmm. I'm a storyteller. You know, stories are my area of expertise, and everything they looked at. Nothing disqualifies this painting from being by Van Gogh. That the patents for the paint colors, for example, are all of that era. They're not from last week or anything like that. So, and that's their business. And it certainly encourages me to have even greater confidence in the stories that I have found and can sort of relate to Van Gogh and his situation. Especially if indeed this was painted while he was in the asylum after having cut his ear off.
But the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam has said no, and it has said no again, that it is not authentic. What do you feel about that? How does that make you feel?
Well, I'm a little disappointed, but actually mostly surprised. This is the first time I've ever been in these sort of exalted fine art circles and am learning astonishing things about, you know, reputations are at stake, not to mention a great deal of money, right? I read in a New York Times article that someone sued the Van Gogh Museum for millions of dollars because they hadn't authenticated a painting. And suddenly it was like, oh my gosh, no wonder. No wonder everybody's being so very careful. But I don't have anything at stake here. And I and actually the rest of the team are confident that this is, in fact, an actual Van Gogh, and we can explain it. And there is that report online that's 458 pages long. And, you know, there's evidence. There's evidence. But there's resistance, too, because, again, professional reputations are at stake. And at first glance, I agree. You go, what? That's not Van Gogh. But, again, the more you know about it, the more sense it makes.
I want to ask you in closing, has this project and working on this changed any way you see your work in the classroom or how you interact with your own research and how you teach students?
Yes, I would say, well, actually, when I finally, when the non-disclosure thing evaporated, the first thing I did was I went and I told all my classes. I couldn't help it. I hadn't been able to speak to it for years at that point. And so, you know, I just sort of was so excited that I just told my students all about it. But, you know, as I said, I've always sort of taught using visual art. And this whole project sort of circles back to research I had done. My first book is on a woman named Laura Marholm, who was, you know, moved around in Europe and associated with these folks in Copenhagen in the 1880s. So it's you start getting familiar with the territory and the cast of characters. And it, you know, Copenhagen, big city, small town in some ways. You know, it's surprising how absolutely interconnected everything was. But then going back to future, I'm not done with this. I'm not done with this. I'm still kind of, I think about it all the time. I think there are more things that I would like to find out, more questions I would like to answer about it. So I'm still working on it.
Susan, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. This has been fun. I love talking about this stuff.
That is Susan Brantley, professor in the Department of German, Nordic, and Slavic at UW-Madison. She had a once-in-a-lifetime experience of helping to authenticate a possible long-lost Van Gogh painting found at a Minnesota garage sale in 2016. Brantley is giving a presentation about the Van Gogh authentication journey. It is set for Saturday, May 3rd at UW-Madison. The event is free and open to the public.